Welcome to the Pac-Man Podcast. Here you will find Dr. Cindy Elliser and Kat McKeever, researchers at Pacific Mammal Research, talking all about marine mammals. We will have a variety of ways to share information with you through discussing research articles and news stories, interviews with other researchers, and more. Join us to learn more about marine mammals and have some fun.
Welcome to the Pac-Man Podcast. I'm Cindy.
And I'm Kat.
And this week we're doing a journal review, and this one is relatively hot off the presses. It came through on our through the internet on our email recently, and it's an interesting one because it's talking about behavior, play, and pollution, which is not something you really think about together, I don't think, too often. but we should be. So this one is in the Marine Pollution Bulletin, the journal, and it was,
it was August of 2023.
Okay, there we go. Thank you. Yes. So quite recent. And the title is Cetaceans Playing with Single-Use Plastics, abbreviated as SUPs, A Widespread Interaction with Likely Severe Impacts by Rodriguez et al. This one caught my eye because I've actually seen this, which we'll talk about in the podcast here. And with my history of, you know, social structure and behavior and watching animals underwater, which I got to do in the Bahamas with the research that I did with the Wild Dolphin Project. And so this kind of hit close to home to me. So I was like, I sent it to Kat and I was like, I think this will be a good one. And luckily, I think she agreed.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah. So this one is, we're talking about play. And so play is, let's start off with the definition, first of all, because it may seem like it's like, oh, well, play, obviously we want play is, but it's always good to really define what that means, especially when you're talking about it in terms of another animal that looks very different than we are. So play is defined in this paper as repeated, seemingly non-functional behavior differing from more adaptive versions structurally, contextually, or developmentally, and initiated when the animal is in a relaxed, unstimulating, or low-stress setting. And that part I was like, well, lots of times when they're playing, it's not relaxed or unstimulating.
Right, the play itself isn't, but when the setting for the play is not like hyper-stimulating.
Yeah, they're not like, oh my gosh, I'm in pure danger. I'm going to go play. Not good. Yeah, so when they're just kind of hanging out and they don't have to go feed, they don't have to, you know, they have the time, right, basically to do so. And this is something that's interesting, you know, with the bottlenose dolphins and the spotted dolphins that we looked at in the Bahamas. We would oftentimes see the spotted dolphins playing a lot more than the bottlenose dolphins. And one thing that we, you know, suggested as possibly why is that the bottlenose have to eat more because they're bigger and they have to, they just don't have as much time to play as the spotted dolphins might. And also they just might not want to do it in front of us. So
true. Right. Cause you have to take into account that observer effect there as well.
Right. So, you know, the spotted dolphins cared less about us being there than the bottlenose dolphins. For whatever reasons. The problem is that play itself can be hard to observe and classify, and to classify it when observing. So is that something that is really just play that is, you know, not that specific thing isn't adaptive, but the behavior of it is, if you put it in context of something else, right? So a lot of times this play is like, oh, I'm playing with a rock. Well, that's not going to be helpful for your long-term health. But playing with that helps you figure out how to do that with whatever prey item you're going to be getting to.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, you know, I like the way they say seemingly non-functional, right? But it definitely is functional. And that's the kind of cool thing about play in especially mammalian populations. Is extremely important, right? Play is vitally important as it develops cognitive functions and involves social, locomotor, and object manipulation. So I think the biggest thing for me that I got to see in the Bahamas is this play of, you know, play fighting, where these young animals are learning how to fight as they would as when they get older for, you know, whatever reasons, if it's for females or whatever. They're learning those social cues and those behaviors that are important when they become adults. And this is also true in humans, right? You learn by playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, as it, I like that it actually defined all of those different categories that it can directly impact, you know, the social, the locomotor, and the manipulation of objects and stuff like that, because it is, especially as people, you know, you can just think of little kids. It's the same thing. They're playing with blocks. Well, that's, you know, that's doing a multitude of different things for their motor skills, their sensory skills, their, you know, their neurological skills. So it's very, very similar. But again, the fact that we have to explicitly define what we mean in non-human species, because again, we can't necessarily ascribe intention to an animal's actions when we don't really understand what they're doing, because they're a different species to us. So I guess all of that to say, it's important to define these things, but it's also very difficult to define these things in non-human species.
Yeah. And that's the, you know, that's the rub, right? Is, well, what are they doing? Well, do we understand that that is play for them, right? What mm-hmm. is play for us is different than what is play for a snail or right. a dolphin or whatever.
Right. And I will say a little plug again, as we always do, for long-term studies, because mm-hmm. that is really one of the best ways that we can make some of these deductions is by observing animals over long periods of time and getting to know their repertoire of behaviors in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, next year, actually, with the Wild Dolphin Project is their 40th anniversary, right? So they've been alive for 40 years. We know those animals and what their behaviors and relationships are. And so we understand, we can better understand what is playing, what is not, because we know we've been around them so much. Mm-hmm. And that really is important.
Right.
So object play. They're talking about playing with plastic, right? So we're talking specifically about object manipulation or playing with a some kind of foreign object. And so this trains their motor area that promotes the improvement of physical and cognitive abilities. And again, even if the object used wouldn't be used for that purpose in real life, like we just said, right? So it's mm-hmm. it like Kat's example of the building blocks is perfect, right? It's those fine motor controls of putting blocks and having them balance and understanding the cognitive ability of understanding when it's going to fall or why it's going to fall and how can I best make this building, right? Those are things that can be then extrapolated and used in many other instances in your life as you grow up. Mm-hmm. So it's the same kind of thing. And so most studies of play to date have been on terrestrial animals, as is a lot of the case when we talk about social, any kind of social thing, because they're just easier to look at and to study than the marine environment, right? Some of our animals are, you know, hundreds of miles offshore, and even the ones that are only a couple miles offshore spend most of their time underwater. So in a lot of the water, we can't look, see under underneath or very easily. So that's the one thing that was great about in the Wild Dolphin Project, is because the waters in the Bahamas are so clear. We can get in the water and see what's going on, whereas most places you can't do that. We certainly can't do it out here with the porpoises.
Right.
Because first of all, it's freezing. And then all, it doesn't have a great long, you can't see very far. So that's all to say is that we know less about play in marine mammals. And a lot of other reasons because of that. And also they have very different bodies than we do. So, you know, they're not playing with hands. You know, they can actually play with their dorsal fin or their flukes and their mouth and all these other things that we don't have. So defining it is a bit more difficult as we, for those different reasons. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to remember that they put this in context of how humans are interacting with these animals and how we affect their behavior in a myriad of ways. So for example, food provisioning in shark bay, and we've talked about this in one of our other journal reviews, affects female reproductive success and calf survival. Mm-hmm. So check out that episode. It's quite interesting. There's been shown to, I thought this was crazy. Human presence has been able to modify traditional migration routes of whale sharks,
mm-hmm.
which is crazy, where they increase the residence time where people are.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess whale sharks like people.
Yes.
Um, I still want to see a whale shark. I still have not been able to see
one. I know, me too.
Fishing activities attract bottlenose, but that also increases their risks of getting hit by boats or getting entangled in fishing gear. Lights affect sea turtles and shearwater chicks, so they'll go in the wrong directions. Whale watch, the other example they gave was whale watching and diving in sperm whales. Like, there's lots of very, very many studies showing how humans' presence and stuff affects behavior. And so what that context is for in this paper is now we're talking about not just us presence of being there, but our stuff being in the ocean. And what does that do to change the behavior of the animals?
Mm-hmm. Which just, I think, is a really interesting way to view it just at the top, because so many studies, and I'm sure most everybody listening is aware that plastic litter in the ocean is not a good thing. Right. Right. We're talking about, like, you know, but we've mostly looked at it from a physiological perspective. And mm-hmm. so the fact that they're then also correlating this to a behavioral effect, mm-hmm. I thought was really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And that links back to the physical, right? Because mm-hmm. plastics are bad, as you said. And with the physical part, ingestion is mm-hmm. Oftentimes what happens. And that could be because they're confusing it for natural prey, or they're using it as a, you know, practicing and then end up eating it when they shouldn't. And other like terrestrial things, they use it to build nests, and then others become entangled. And so it's the really interesting thing about this, like you said, is that they're linking the physical part that we're seeing as to how do we get there? Like, why are they
right? Why? Basically. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Which is honestly, like, that's been a really big question in terms of, especially in terms of modifying the plastics that are created. Like, are there ways that we can make this less appealing? Like, you know, are they mistaking it for prey? Are they, you know, like, what are they doing with this? And are there ways we can make this less appealing to the animals too? So
yeah,
pretty interesting context.
Yeah. I mean, if it's not just about the fact that they think it's food and they eat it, like plastic bags and turtles and jellyfish, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. Is there, you know, this behavior that's the problem, not the food part of it? And how do those connect? Is really important to understand. And the fact that these guys are social animals and do play, right? So that's going to go into how they're being affected by these, the increasing amount of plastic that's being put in the oceans.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this was interesting. I didn't realize this, but the cetaceans have been proposed as global indicators of marine litter impacts. And a 2020 study showed that at least 69% of the species have been shown to ingest it or become entangled in anthropogenic items. But again, little is known about how that happens. So mm-hmm. almost 3/4 of species are being affected by this plastic, but we have no idea how or why.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's very important to understand in order to stop it, as Kat said, or to mitigate it at least. Mm-hmm. And so I thought this was also interesting too, is that the play with plastic litter is underreported. They are looking at, they had to widen their search basically to find more instances of it, because a lot of times if you see something crazy, you do a note. And we've talked about notes on the podcast before about how important those are, right? Of showing, like, hey, this is something that happened. Like, has anybody else seen this? And it doesn't always, I think it's become so ubiquitous, like, oh, well, they're playing with this. Mm-hmm. They play with kelp, so then they'll play with the plastic. That makes sense, but I'm not going to write a paper on it. And mm-hmm. so it's not in the literature, as we'll see. And that's unfortunate, right? It just becomes this thing like, oh, well, yeah, we see it, but it doesn't really, there's no point.
It doesn't make the headlines.
Right, yeah, and there's no point to talking about it because everybody knows that it happens. But if yeah. we're not talking about it, we won't be able to fix it, right? And know how pervasive it is. Or if there's certain species that are much more likely to be affected than others. Mm-hmm. And so with that, so they combined a peer review literature search, and then they also looked at social media. And this is a very interesting case of how social media can be used for the good of science. And within the limitations that there are. And then they also used a case study from a certain place that has been looking at it's a whale watching place that has documented more of these over a long time span. So this emphasizes the importance of writing things up when you see them so that they can get in the literature and they're more likely to be used for you know, mitigation measures and just showing how the prevalence of it, and the use of social media to inform science. And so, for example, there's an entanglement group on Facebook that is basically posts things about entangled whales, dolphins, and porpoises and pinnipeds from all around the world. And so we can keep up to date and see these, even if they're not written up in literature, we know that these things are happening and hopefully see good things that they get freed and everything. But those types of things are good parts of social media that can help science. And all of these are opportunistic.
Right.
And again, opportunistic doesn't mean that it's not as good as other things. It just means it's different. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, some of the papers that we've had, the eagles taking the fish from the salmon from the porpoises and the seals. Well, that was because we were out there. We weren't specifically studying that, but we were out there looking and happened to see it. And so the same thing, most of these cases, whether it's research or social media, they're not out there looking for animals playing with trash. You're just out there looking at the animals. And then they see these things. So yep. It's just the emphasizing that importance of that kind of observation, which I think is really great.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of the background. So the methods are relatively short because, you know, there's not too many stats or anything in this paper, and we'll talk about why. But basically, they did a Web of Science and Google Scholar search. So for those of you who are looking for papers and stuff, Google Scholar really is a great way to find them. And not just Google. You're not going to get the same.
Important distinction.
Yeah. So make sure you put Google Scholar in, and then you can put that in, and then it'll pull up. You know, you can put keywords or even like, you know, the last name and a subject title. And you'll pull up a bunch of stuff that you can find. So they looked through those two for a good literature search. And then they use Twitter and Facebook. So that's an interesting thing as well. You know, what type, who's posting where is another part of social media. You know, where are you going to find the things that you're looking for? Is it Twitter? Is it Facebook? Is it Instagram? Is it Snapchat? Is it, you know,
All of the different options that we have, the 50 right. billion and, options that we have now for social media outlets.
And some I don't even know of. So I'm like, I know, I think Snapchat is new, but that's probably old now. It's probably something else. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, there's limitations within that, but those are two kind of big, you know, very, very big platforms. And then it was interesting too, and hadn't thought about this, is that they did it in two different languages. So they did in Spanish and Portuguese along with English. And I guess it's been shown in other studies that widening that language helps to bring up more entries and more.
Mm-hmm. Which makes a lot of sense.
It totally does. And I think we kind of get siloed sometimes in the English, you know, our English speaking, that we just use English, right? But there's lots of other, you know, posts and stuff that are going to be in different languages that search in English won't necessarily pull up, even if there's, the translation software or whatever.
Right.
So, and they did say they could, if they did more languages, they could have found more, but you know, you have to stop somewhere. and I assume that the authors are probably, Spanish speakers, which is why they chose Spanish and Portuguese, I would assume. So they put search words in for plastic, marine litter, marine debris, user plastics, single-use plastics, paired with marine animals, cetaceans, dolphins, and sperm whales. And then these terms were all combined with play, interact, playing, or interacting. So I think they did a multitude of variations of those combinations, which is exhausting.
Impressive. Anyone who's tried to Google something very specifically and struggled because they're not using the correct search terms will resonate with this. Exactly. I was reading that and I was like, oh my gosh, that would have taken hours.
Right? Because then you have to, okay, plastic cetaceans interacting. Okay. Plastic cetaceans playing. Okay. Plastic cetaceans interact. Oh my God. But, you know, if you had plastic cetaceans interacting versus plastic cetaceans interact, you may end up getting different results, right?
It's correct.
It's computers are only as good as what's being put in, and that has to be very specific sometimes for it to pick up that, you know, to match things, right? So it's good remembering that. So they looked at, they recorded the species, the region, the ocean. They did user plastic versus fishing related, right? So they're separating like the trash plastics versus fishing related plastics. Mm-hmm. Specific object versus remains of an object. And this is from guidelines from the Marine Strategy Framework Directive. So again, this is also good. They're talking about let's create a common language and how we report these things so it becomes easier to find later. And that we're all talking about the same thing, right? Having the same kind of language when we're talking about this type of stuff. And then they looked at color and the body area used by the animal. I thought it was interesting they looked at color. I wasn't really sure what the...
I think because they're looking to see if certain colors are more likely to be interacted with than others. So I think they've seen that in other species where they will preferentially play with, or not play with, but they will preferentially go after specific colors more than others. Just trying to see if there was any correlation there.
Yeah. I mean, if you give me the choice between like something green and something white, I'm going to take the green one probably. So,
right. So, you know, exactly.
Exactly. Oh, we were playing a game with one of our friends, and we had little eggs, and she wanted all the blue eggs. So she
see,
all
there
the
you
blue
go.
Eggs. But then it was a problem when all the blue eggs were gone. She's like, "Oh no, no, I have to use a different color." So maybe some of the animals have their preferences as well. Okay, so they used photo. You know, it's photos and videos that are basically posted, and sometimes just descriptions of what happened. But photos are an issue because if you only have one, it does not always give you the correct context of what is happening, right? It's the same thing as taking a quote from somebody out of context, right? You're not understanding exactly what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
The describer of the event is likely untrained, right? From social media, this is likely just people that are out on boats. They're not trained in cetacean behavior. Looking at the media coverage for the Iberian orcas that are, attacking the boats out there, and a plug for that episode of our podcast as well, check it out. But the describers of events may not be actually giving the correct context of what is happening either.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was that if there was only one photo available, it was deemed as play with uncertainty because, okay, so you know it was interacting with the thing, but they don't know for sure it was play,
mm-hmm.
which is important. The photo sequences are better because that can give you more context. Obviously, video is the best if you can get it. And then the descriptions were reviewed by the authors to determine whether they were, accurate or where it was coming from and if they were accurate descriptions of what was going on in those sequences in the video.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that they put they use the year of publication, not the year of the event, because some of these may be like, oh, we saw this 5 years ago and
right.
here it is. So it's not always, we're not always able to get when the thing actually happened. So that's what they did for year of publication instead. Doesn't make sense. Because of the uncertainty in how the data was collected, because this is not, there's only very few that were actually research papers that they looked at. And then that certain species are more likely to be seen by boats, depending on if these are from whale watching ones or just in certain locations and who is posting, right? So some people are going to post about it, other people aren't. So there's lots that you're going to miss. If you're out looking at different animals, like again, you're more likely to see maybe spotted dolphins than bottlenose dolphins playing with it because of their attraction to the boats, or at least they don't care about the boats versus other species. And lots of times we're not going to see it, even if it's happening, because we're not out with all the animals all over the world. So because of all that kind of uncertainty, they didn't do any advanced statistics, which makes a lot of sense because you can't be like, oh, well, this is more likely that this species was doing it because we saw it all there, but that was in one location and is not representative of the entire, population of that species.
Mm-hmm.
It's important not to, if they did stats on it, it would be overstating what they were finding, right? It's not going to be representative of the whole, most likely, based on the data. But I think what the power of this is, though, is that, again, there's still power in observation, right? Just because there's no stats here doesn't mean this isn't very valid and very important in our understanding of what is going on with these animals.
Hmm.
So just because there's no numbers or a few numbers, don't throw it away, right?
Yes.
It's important. And the last one, so the last part was a case study, and this is a whale watch operator on São Miguel Island in the Azores, which is another bucket place I want to go to. These are not trained observers in cetacean behavior, but they were basically consistent, repeated reports of the animals approaching and interacting with the plastic. And so they were seen as reliable signs of cetacean playing, right? So the sheer magnitude of how many they saw over, I think it was like 10 or 11 years.
12 years.
Yeah, 12 mm-hmm. years. It's very unlikely it's anything else than them playing with the plastics, right? Based on mm-hmm. that amount of data. And then they noted any scars or entanglements that happened in that. So they're looking at a literature review, social media, and then the case study in the Azores to document the extent of what these animals are doing with these mainly single-use plastics, right? We're gonna find that out, but that's basically what they're playing with. And I'll leave you with this before we go on our break. What plastic do you think is the most common one that they found that they're playing with?
You can just probably guess.
Probably guess, but we'll let you marinate on that for a couple minutes as we take a break. We'll be right back. Hello, listeners. This is Cindy, the research director at Pacific Mammal Research, and I wanted to take just a minute to thank you for listening and supporting our work. And I wanted to see maybe if you wanted to learn a little bit more about the background of what we do and what we see in the field and other kind of cool information that you can get by subscribing to the podcast for only $5 a month. You can get ad-free episodes as well as these mini episodes where we discuss the things we've seen in the field, the stuff we've gone to with workshops, and other little interesting tidbits of information for our subscribers only. This is a great way to help support PacMam, who we are a very small nonprofit, so every dollar helps us continue the work that we do and provide the information and the fun podcast that we have that hopefully you guys are enjoying. So if you can, think about it, subscribe to the podcast and help support our work, and we hope you enjoy. All right, we're back. And so now we're getting into the results. And we're going to start off with the literature review, which is very short. As we explained, there was no
spoiler alert.
Yeah. There were only 4 events in 3 studies.
Which is wild.
It really is, right? I kind of thought about it too, though, when we were looking at the asphyxiation of the harbor porpoises. You know, and then we looked in the literature, mm-hmm. Not in the literature, there wasn't anything in the literature, but then when we looked in the data, there was 27 cases, but no one had written it up.
Right.
You know, so again, it's that default of like, well, it happens, but it didn't seem important to write up, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Northwest Atlantic, the rough-toothed dolphins played with a piece of plastic, and they had then also rhizos and long-finned pilot whales with plastic bags in the Mediterranean. So if you guessed plastic bags or like sheets of plastic like that, that was the most you, that would be correct.
Mm-hmm.
So unsurprising. And so, you know, kind of puts in perspective why there are so many of these plastic bag bans going on and why it's important, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then moving on to the social media, like I said, that's it. That's all the literature.
that's all there was.
That's all there was. That's all she wrote. There were 34 events on social media with 8 different species, and 53% were playing, and then 47% were potentially playing, right? With plastic litter of some sort. The majority were bottlenose, and so I think that's for 2 reasons. One, they're often closest to the shore in most mm-hmm. places, so you're just more likely to see them. 2, they're common
mm-hmm.
in a lot of places. Like most places have some kind of bottlenose, so it makes sense that they would be higher on the list,
right?
Then they had the second place winners. I don't, maybe not winners here, but
yeah, no.
In second place, spinner dolphins, and then sperm whales. And sperm whales, I think that the one that's been going that went around the internets with the sperm whale with like however many tons of or pounds of trash and stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that one's, they for some reason do more than others. The others were the Guana dolphin, the false killer whale, the killer whale, the Atlantic spotted dolphin, and common dolphin. So those were your species that were seen. And again, likely due to those are ones that the people that are out on boats are more likely to see versus other species. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, they're all odontocetes. So no mysticetes, no baleen whales, which is interesting. This was over at least 18 years. So close to two decades, we've been documenting this on social media, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, actually.
Going on for a while. All of them were single-use plastics. There was 56% of them were sheets. Plastic bags were 38%. Leftovers of raffia sacks, and I had to look this up because I did not know what a raffia sack was, but it's a burlap sack. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, did you know that? I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a term that's not used commonly in the U.S., I believe.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that was only 6%, so the majority of those were all white. So, again, which makes sense because if it's plastic bags and sheet plastic, like that's all some shade of white or clearish. 62% were pictures and 38% were videos. So, and I wonder if that's maybe increased, like the videos now that, you know, cell phones and stuff are much better at.
Yeah, I'm sure, videos. Especially over almost 20 years of data, there's definitely going to be a bias for the first decade or so of having more photos than pictures or than videos rather. But
yeah,
exactly. So we'll see. It'll be cool to see if we are able to get more in future. And a lot more people are doing video recordings of just random events that they happen to see too. So
a good way to use thing. That. If you see them come up and then you go, oh, video, and then you may not get it. But if you're just videoing because you're videoing the animals, you're more likely to catch something.
Yeah.
In the case study, again, it was 2011 to 2022 that they looked at that. There were 21 different individuals interacting with litter. And I was confused about the term individual because it didn't mention that they knew these were different individuals, like through photo ID or anything. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they were all just different species. So then it was obviously different individuals.
Right. Yeah. Like different animals, mm-hmm. perhaps would have been a better word there.
Yeah. So in some way they figured out that there's at least 21 different, individual animals or something, doing it. 62% were bobtails again. Rizzos were 19%. Sperm whale were 14%. Common dolphin, 5%. 90% of them were single use plastic with two cases of hard plastic boxes. And I think the sperm whales were playing with those.
Mm-hmm.
There were remains of sheet-like items were 53%, and plastic bags were 42%, and the raffia sacks were 5%, and mostly white again. And I think the remains of sheet-like items, I think, you know, that's, again, that we don't know what that originally was, right? It could have been a large plastic bag. It could have been some large plastic sheet. I mean, we found a rolled-up tarp in the Bahamas one time.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy. It's a good reminder that the plastic does not stay as it is when it goes into the ocean. It breaks up over time until it eventually turns into microplastics. So we have all these different ranges of intact items and partially degraded items that they are looking at.
Mm-hmm.
There were no obvious signs of injuries, but there were two animals that were observed entangled during the study period. So there was instances of not greatness. So the overall behavior, so they're looking at where are they putting this. They often use their head, using the melon, which is the forehead, or the beak, which is their mouth, 34% of the time. They use their dorsal fin 32% of the time. They use their pec fins 20% of the time, and their fluke 14% of the time. Sometimes they move this between body parts. Now, I have seen this with seaweed, like sargassum, in the Bahamas. Dolphins are so good at playing hacky sack. Do you know what? Have you played hacky sack before, Kat?
Mm-hmm. I actually do.
Oh, nice. My son just got a hacky sack for free and one of like the free gift things. And he's like, cool, hacky sack. I'm like, you can't even use a hacky sack.
That's hard. How you learn.
It did. True. So in case you don't know what a hacky sack is, it's basically just a little like bead-filled, sand-filled, small like ball. And you kick it on your shoulder, on your hand, on your arm, on your knee, on your foot. You want to keep, it's basically juggling it. You're keeping it with any body part you can before it touches the ground. How many touches can you do? And sometimes they do it in groups, so you pass it between different people. It was a very big thing in the 90s, back in the day when we were in school. But dolphins are so good at doing it. I mean, I have seen one have it, you know, grab it with their mouth and then they flick it and it goes to the dorsal fin and then they'll pop it and it goes to their fluke and then they'll pop it and they'll swim back around and get their pec fin. I mean, I think I've seen it go to every single body part in for one animal. Wouldn't watch
Wow.
it. So it's they're very good at being able to know exactly where they're putting things on their bodies. So it's very cool to watch when it's not plastic. When it's, you know, sargassum or seaweed or something. Sometimes they will catch them purposefully and then interact with them. So they have observed them going over to it and picking it up on purpose. It wasn't just that they happened to swim through it, right? Which would be different. And they've actually also seen this in the Bahamas. Again, they would do the same thing with sargassum, but this time it was a large a remnants of a plastic bag or a sheet or something like that. And they grabbed it in its mouth and swam around and did the same kind of thing that they do with the sargassum. And then sometimes they go back to pick it up. Like they'll drop it and go back and pick it up. And that's part of the game sometime. Sometimes they'll throw it out of the water, which is interesting. You wonder if, you know, okay, they're just throwing it, but you'd like to be like, get this out of my ocean. That would be a bird thing if they were saying that. But of course, we don't know.
Cartoon.
Yeah, exactly. Get it out. And then they did have animals from the same group that interacted with different plastic items simultaneously. So two different animals in the same group interacting with two different things of plastic. So not completely isolated. And
Right.
also cats are involved, which is not great.
Mostly
Because
because they are then learning to interact with these things as well. Just
exactly.
any potentially negative behavior.
Right.
So.
And you know, social learning happens not just from mothers to calves. It happens from calves to calves, from you know, other conspecifics, right? Other aunts, uncles, or just friends, or just other animals in the population. They see that and they go, ooh, right? Just as like our toddlers do, they copy the, you know, what you do because they're like, oh, that's cool. Let me try that. So they do too. And you know, maybe it's possible that the adults understand that this is not part of their environment, and they're, you know, they're playing with it, but they're doing so in a way that's not going to endanger them. But then, if a kid re replicates that behavior, a calf replicates that behavior, they don't understand that yet. And same thing with toddlers, right? So why it's so important to model the behavior that we want that they understand, the what's okay and what's not, and why. So that's pretty much the gist of it. Mainly, they're playing with it all over different parts of their bodies, and mostly single-use plastic. And I think that's really important to remember. Single-use plastic. My friend just posted something she posted years ago, and she said, it's amazing that we're at a point where it takes less energy, you know, we see, perceive it as taking less energy to go out, like drill for the oil, pull the oil, process it, create it, put it into a, you know, a fork, and then eat that with that fork and then throw it away, than it is to just wash the fork that we have.
Right.
Kind of puts that in
Yeah.
perspective, like, oh, that's kind of ridiculous. So it's and it's causing more, you know, more problems than we are really, I mean, we're aware of them, but I don't think we're really putting out there exactly the extent of or understanding the extent of what's changing in the world because of all these in plastics that just don't go away, right? It's single use, but it's not single go away. And that's not really a technical term or anything, but single go away. It'd be nice if it just went away after we used it, but it persists. So the big part of this is cetaceans play with plastics. It's true. It's a thing that they do
Intentionally,
intentionally, right?
seemingly.
And again, this is the thing where it's like, okay, yeah, maybe we all understand that, but it needs to be in the literature, right? That this is what's get used for conservation measures, for showing politicians, for, you know, the science has to back it up. So we may all know that they play with it, but unless it's written up in a way, something like this, it may not be able to be used as much as it should be in for conservation. So we have 11 species identified that do it in the Atlantic, Pacific, Indian Oceans, and Mediterranean and the Red Sea. So pretty much everywhere.
Pretty ubiquitous, pretty
Yeah.
ubiquitous behavior.
It's not just like, well, these certain species do it. Again, mainly sheets of plastic or bags. And again, because it's the single use, it makes it easier to get into the ocean because you just throw it away and then it goes into landfills or gets trucked to places and, or just washes down a drain if it's, something like that. And there has, we talked about this a little bit, that the ingestion of single-use plastics has been documented already in several species. So Kat brought this up earlier, right? There are quite a few studies showing plastics being eaten by many different species of cetaceans. And so this is obviously a end product that is not great. And it's, we have been trying to do better, right? We don't want to be like, humans are terrible, even though sometimes we are. There have been more than 60 countries that have banned or have highly regulated single-use plastics, and including the United Nations. There's been work through there. We just had, basically a plastic ban here. Although we still have plastics, it's a thicker bag that is more reusable, so it's not just the single use. Some places have banned them completely. But the idea here is that we're doing better, but it's still prevalent, right? The plastic's still there. And again, once you make the plastic, it doesn't really go away for really ever, but at least hundreds or thousands of years, depending on the type of plastic it is.
Yeah.
So once it's there, it's there.
And again, I mean, it's wonderful that over 60 countries have been mm-hmm. participating in this, but obviously that's not all of the countries in the world, right? So it's a portion, but we still have a consistent input of these single-use plastics into the environment, unfortunately.
And which countries are those, right? So if it's 60 mm-hmm. countries that are, if you're comparing the amount that's being produced, right? Is it 60 countries that are producing a very small amount, which is still great, but it does not going to make as much of an impact as if, the US or, other large countries in Europe completely banned it all and we didn't put anything else up into the environment, right? So it's a matter of that of scale as well, right? We need everybody to be on board, but especially the ones that are making the biggest impact mm-hmm. on that. So again, all of these are anecdotal in nature, again, showing the importance of these anecdotes, but also that how to get these out into the literature so that they can be used. We don't have dedicated studies because it's hard to do. You can't know where they're going to be playing with plastic.
Right.
It's just not... You don't want to just dump plastic into the water and see if they play with it. That's not a good alternative. So it's one where you need, as Kat was saying, long-term studies that are out there and can document this behavior as they're out documenting other things, right? Mm-hmm. And so also important that this shows how, there are biases in social media reporting, right? And understanding what those are. And if you properly apply restrictions and how you use that data, it can still be very useful and very informative. Right, you can avoid some of the biases that are inherent in how the data is being collected, and you can provide information to the scientific community. So it's important for people to understand that even if they're not trying, they are maybe still helping by posting these things on social media, and then we have access to them as researchers and just regular people in the world too. So you can see what's going on.
Right.
We talked about social learning, right? So they may be teaching this to the calves. Also that the dolphins use tools like sponges and conch shells and Shark Bay. I love this, the Amazon River dolphins throw sticks. I forgot about this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like the males, they're like, look, ladies, look how far I can throw this stick.
Yep.
And the ladies are like,
crazy.
So even though there are some that use tools, most reports are attributed to playing with some kind of object rather than using it for a specific purpose. And even we've seen dolphins playing with fish, right? Fish that they're not going to eat, but they're using them as target practice. We would see this in the Bahamas. So there's many different ways that they can use that. And you could say that that's a somewhat of a tool because it's helping them learn, but it's also they're just playing with it, right? So mm-hmm. a lot of it is these animals are curious and smart, and they're going to check out their environment and they're going to play with things. I mean, who doesn't like to play? As long as you have some time for it, if you don't have to just eat constantly, like,
right.
And so, as I mentioned before, with the sargassum play, the same body areas for play that they use for natural objects, they're using for plastic. So again, this supports that play behavior that, you know, what they're describing them doing is exactly what we see with them playing with sargassum in the Bahamas, just straight up. So it's just another thing, like, well, they're using whatever's in their environment. And
right.
That's not great if it's not, if it's something that could hurt them.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, how can it hurt them? Like, okay, so maybe a sheet of plastic isn't going to, it's going to be hard to entangle a dolphin perhaps, but if it happens to have a hole in it and they get it around it, like one of the animals had in the case study had a plastic sheet that was around its neck. So it had some kind of hole in it and it got it on there and then it couldn't get it off, right? They don't have hands to rip things off with. So if the hole is something large enough, they can get entangled. So there was that, do you remember the case of the orca that was out here and it was recently, I think it was like last year. I think he was a big killer whale. Anyway, he was really interested in the buoys. He was like playing with them. He was coming up and like nudging them and playing with some, you know, buoys that have.
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they were worried about him. So like, don't play with the buoys because you're going to get entangled. And guess what? He got entangled.
Mm-hmm.
He luckily was able to get it off himself. So he wasn't too entangled that he was, you know, became a problem, but that's exactly what they were worried about is what happened.
Right.
And so it's these things, the more that they are going to be playing with these things, the more likely bad things will happen, whether they get entangled or they eat it. Right. So my side story on this is that I think I've mentioned this before in one of the other podcasts, but we were watching a bottlenose dolphin and a spotted dolphin play, kind of interact and kind of playing together, which is a little bit unusual in the first place, but they were playing the sargassum tag. So you take sargassum and you put it, you know, in your mouth or you put it in your dorsal fin, whatever you play around. But the rule is that you can't take it from the other animal. You have to drop it. And then the other animal comes up and takes it. And those are the rules. Well, this one, the bottlenose dolphin was having a day and he did not want to share his sargassum. So he's swimming around. And then it was almost like, well, no, if I can't have it, then nobody can. And he ate it. And I was like, you guys don't eat seaweed. What's going on? But what if that was a plastic bag?
Right. And that's the thing. If they're treating it in just the same manner, then it likely will be at some point, unfortunately.
Right. And their bodies can handle the sargassum, right? They'll chunk that out, but the plastic is not the same. So that's going to get possibly impacted, going to cause them to feel full when they're not, and then they could starve and they don't eat, or, you know, all these kinds of things. And I've seen them playing with plastic sheets in the Bahamas as well, like plastic bags and stuff like that in the same manner. So it really hammered home to me. I was like, oh my God, what if that was fresh?
Yeah.
So they were mentioning too, that the unique characteristics of the gastrointestinal tract of the dolphin is fairly complex. And so it makes them especially vulnerable to this kind of ingestion and impaction and possibility of starving because they've eaten stuff in their stomachs. And again, many of the species have been shown to have plastic in their stomachs, from even like boots, you know, whole boots and stuff like that, to smaller objects. Side note, thinking about eating something whole, like a whole boot, right? They found like whole, like, you know, like boots and other larger objects in larger whales. There was a paper that just came out, I haven't read it yet, but it was, they found an orca, like intact sea otters.
You found, wait, what?
Intact sea otters. Like he just ate the whole thing.
Just like a pill. Just like, just swallowed it whole?
Apparently.
Thanks. That's bizarre.
Like I said,
stay tuned. Maybe we'll be doing that in the next journal review.
Yeah, I got to download the paper, but a friend posted it. And I was like, what?
Why?
Like, you got to chew your food, dude, a little bit. I mean, at least rip it up. Like, they don't really chew, but anyway. So things like things like that can happen where they ingest like the whole thing, right? And dolphins generally eat their fish whole. So larger objects, you know, depending on the species, they may rip up to smaller pieces, but they're still taking large chunks. So it'd be, it's not uncommon for them to have large chunks of plastic in their stomach when that's found. So the kind of the end part that they wanted to talk about, and we've kind of mentioned this so far, is, you know, is that we need to document this more for sure in the literature, not just on social media. But that we should adopt a kind of standardized data collection and protocols so that it is, you know, apples to apples comparison and more easily able to be found when you're doing Google Scholar searches or even on social media. So if you post about it, maybe there's a hashtag that we use with specific words. So it's very easy. Like, there's lots of literature out there. So it's possible that they missed some publications that did have it in there, but weren't able to find it because they didn't have the right keywords to look for. So the example they gave was like, you know, play with plastic litter. Like, maybe that's the terminology we use, or some kind of wording that everybody uses so that it's easier to find.
And we've encountered that even just with our work with porpoises, where trying to describe certain behaviors that we're seeing, you know, other researchers may be calling it something else than what we're calling it. And all of a sudden it gets very difficult to compare when you're trying to figure out how frequently are these behaviors observed when you're using different terminologies. So I really like that they made that a priority here at the kind of end of the paper, is like, we need to have this consistent naming methodology in order to be accurately tracking this over time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's a common thing throughout science, right? To define what a group is, to define
right
a certain behavior is. We need to be knowing what we're talking about as the same things. So I agree. It was a very important distinction that they made. They also said, obviously, underwater video is best. And I put in parentheses, duh, for my own thing. But like, yeah, obviously, if you have video, that's always better than just still pictures when you're looking at something like this, right? To get that full context. And this, you know, the great example of that, again, is the Bahamas, where it's like the fact that we can watch them underwater gives us context of what happens before and after when a dolphin leaps out of the water. The rest of, you know, in most places we just get to see that leap, but we don't understand what happened before and after as to why they was doing it, you know. So the more video we can get, the better we can understand.
Yeah.
The important to understand, again, play is natural. These guys are going to play, and they are going to play with anything that's in their environment to some degree. And so playing with plastic litter is not good. It's dangerous. And particularly when calves are learning and maybe not understanding that that's not a natural part of their environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then certain species are likely to be more vulnerable due to their playful behavior, right? Certain species are just going to be more playful than others, depending on their activity budgets and what they have available as time to play during the day.
Right. Yep.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunate too, right? Because this is the one they're just trying to play, and they're the ones that are going to have more, be more impacted by this than others. And so it's important to understand when you're looking at, you know, where certain areas that are more polluted than others with this type of plastic, the social behavior of the animals comes into play as to who is going to be more impacted, and how then do we mitigate that, and do we try to help those animals?
Mm-hmm.
Plastic pollution is set to, I think I said, I wrote plastic pollution set to trip in the coming decades, but I think I meant to say triple.
Triple? Yeah. I'm going to guess that was a triple.
Yeah. Which is terrifying too. Like, we know this is a problem, and yet we're still just, well, it's going to keep going.
Yeah.
So we really need to, you know, have further awareness and studies documenting this behavior. And hopefully that can help spur more regulations and change in our human behavior to stop putting so much pollution into the ocean, right? And stop using as many single use plastics as we do.
Yeah. And I mean, that is the one thing, and we've seen this consistently over time, is that when there is a good reason given to people that they can relate to, that they can visually and viscerally understand, it does create more behavioral change. So again, advertising this more, like talking about all of this more, documenting it more frequently, the more people that know that this is an issue, the less likely they are to use single-use plastics. I think that's the biggest thing too, is giving people context for what this does in the environment. And most people just simply don't have that. So, you know, the more that we can get this type of paper out to, you know, by doing podcasts on it, by talking about this issue more frequently, by documenting it more often, et cetera, the better.
Yeah, exactly. And we all have that, right? It's hard to change behavior, especially when it's convenient, right? That's the biggest problem about single-use plastics is the convenience. And it's really hard to be inconvenienced. It really is. We all do it and have that difficult to do something a little bit that's a little bit harder. But if you have oh, this is directly impacting this, and if I just take this extra time, that won't happen, or at least it will help it not happening. You're more likely to change that behavior if you have some kind of concrete something that you're going towards, rather than just being like, I'm going to inconvenience myself more.
Yeah.
So it is really important to understand. And I think you're right. A lot of people would, knowing more detail about why, it's not just like, oh, well, they just shouldn't play with plastic because they should be smart enough not to do that. Well, it's not that straightforward, right? Mm-hmm. And there's reasons as to why. And so understanding those reasons can help us, I think, change our behavior as well.
Yeah.
So the last thing to do is, of course, call for further awareness and specific policies to reduce the quantities of single-use plastics and to mitigate the ecological impacts caused by them. And again, papers like this, and we need more of them, will help us do that, because the policymakers need the drive from the public and the scientific community to say, like, this is a problem and we need to stop it and this is why. So so it was really great that these authors put this out here. And again, that was in Marine Pollution Bulletin, Cetaceans Playing with Single-Use Plastics, a Widespread Interaction with Likely Severe Impacts, by Rodriguez et al., 2023. So thank you for listening, and thank you the authors for putting out that paper. It was really great to be able to dive into that. So with that, next episode, we will be back with the Marine Mammal Highlight. So keep checking out your Instagram stories and your Facebook stories for the poll for that. I have no idea who is going to be up for debate. But
no idea.
We'll find out. Maybe it'll be the short fin pilot whale against somebody else, since we did the long fin pilot whale last time. We'll see. But keep an eye out for that. And of course, remember to check out our website for everything Pacific Mammal Research, and for our merch store, where you can get cool shirts and mugs and tote bags and things like that. And all proceeds go to the project, back to the research that we do, and for giving you cool, fun things like these podcasts. So with that, we will talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.
This was brought to you by Pacific Mammal Research, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Check out our website, www.pacmam.org, that's PACMAM, to learn more about us, our research, and the educational opportunities that we provide. Also, help us continue providing fun and educational content like this by donating today. Your help is how we can continue to do our work and share it with you. Thanks.